Hi there, and welcome back to the Lexington Podcast. If you happen to be listening to this sometime after January of 2024, then it may not be super obvious that we took a year and a half off from podcasting. And that year and a half was filled with some of the most extreme highs and lows of our lives. This episode, our premiere episode after a year and a half absence, is a very personal episode. It's filled with our personal apology for being gone for so long and all the reasons why we were gone for so long. We talk about grief and the passing of our father, someone we were both incredibly close to. He was an idol and a mentor to both of us. And we also talk about major career changes, including what it's like to be a teacher in the year 2024. Towards the end of the episode, we talk about the future of the Lexington Podcast, including all the fun episodes that we have lined up. And, spoiler, we are really, really excited about these episodes and the future of this podcast. We have some seriously awesome things on the horizon, and we'll hope you'll stick around with us for the ride. But here's the thing. You may be like, whoa, I come here for your Kentucky true crime and weird history, not all your personal stuff. And seriously, we get it. No hard feelings. We're excited to be back delivering you our regular stuff every week. So excited, in fact, we're dropping a bonus episode this week, the premiere of our latest true crime case, the tragic 2019 homicide of Savannah Spurlock. This case dominated Kentucky headlines in 2019 when a 22-year-old woman from Richmond, Kentucky went missing after a night of partying in Lexington. It's an incredibly devastating but fascinating case, filled with unclear motives and the extremes of party culture, and the interesting relationship between technology and solid police work. And though the case is technically solved, there's still so many parts that are still a mystery, even to this day. So that being said, if you've been a longtime listener and you'd like to know what we've been up to lately, carry on. Feel free to listen to this episode. But if you're here for our usual stuff, then by all means, you just feel free to skip to the next episode, Savannah Spurlock, Part 1. Either way, we're excited to be back, and we're even more excited that you're here. Let's do this. Hi, we're the Lexington Podcast.
We are all things Lexington, Kentucky.
History, true crime, current events, and local recommendations.
Glad you're here, y'all.
Okay, welcome back, Jonathan.
Thanks a whole lot, sis.
I'm trying to get my sea legs after being gone for so long.
I know. Well, how you been?
I've been good. I think that we owe our listeners kind of quite the apology. Yeah. I mean, I checked the last time that we officially published an episode, and it was like April of 2022.
I'm ashamed of us.
I'm ashamed of us too. I just feel like we've got some splaining to do.
No doubt.
As Ricky Ricardo would say. So I guess we kind of maybe start back with, you know, we took that 2022 summer off, and we usually take summer. I mean, I have kids, you have a busy band schedule, et cetera. And then our dad got really sick in October of 2022 and then passed away on New Year's Eve, actually, of 2022 as well. So we had maybe the shittiest fall of our lives.
On record, yeah.
And the reason for that is that both of us were obviously incredibly close to him, and he was one of the greatest people in the whole world. And so it was a tough time. And then I think it took us a really long time to process. And then now we're nowhere near something better. At least I'm just speaking for myself right now, but it's the reason for this long absence. And that being said, he was a fan of the podcast. I think that he would really insist that we start this back up. I mean, it's a huge passion project for you and I anyway. So my goal is I would love to be able to have a tribute to him down the road, especially with football is back. Mm-hmm. And it's almost tough for me to like actually watch and like walk through a room where Buns is watching a football game because it reminds me so hardcore of Dad. Mm. And so I figured and he was a huge Wildcat fan. So I figured that we do like some episode coming up where it's like Coach Cal or Rupp or some sort of like Stoops type trivia in honor of Dad. But
love it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You want to hear a funny thing that happened yesterday that reminded me of Dad?
Tell me.
So evidently, Spectrum lost their service with ESPN. Disney owns ESPN, and somehow their contract with Spectrum was too expensive. So on cable in Kentucky, there was no ESPN yesterday. I thought to myself, oh my God, Dad would have thrown a brick through the TV seeing that little disclaimer message saying, sorry, no ESPN because Disney's contract was too much. So whoever has Spectrum yesterday and likes football, I bet is just as pissed as Dad.
Oh my God.
Isn't that wild?
That is really wild. Well,
it was a super whiny little message from Spectrum saying like, Disney charges us too much and we're so sorry. Go to disneysmean.com.
Like they were like, blaming?
They were 100% blaming Disney. Like, the reason why you're not watching football blue screen with white type is because Disney charges too much and we couldn't pay it.
Because Disney's a bunch of assholes.
Go to your nearest bar to watch your football game.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Spectrum is in hot water right now because of that, I'm sure.
Oh, Dad would have been so pissed.
Oh my God. And he's at the low end of the lunatic NFL, or lunatic college football.
I would have said he was mid-range.
Middle tier.
Middle of the road.
Fair enough. Well, I know this episode won't be exactly, you know, formatted towards a specific goal. It's more like saying sorry to the listeners, first of all.
Yeah, and like where we've been.
And bringing us back, right?
What we've been up to. You know, it's been a year and a half, and we've been doing a lot. You know, we've been grappling.
You changed your career.
I did.
You're not a teacher anymore.
I changed my whole entire career. I don't know if I actually ever said this in prior episodes, but I feel like I like alluded to it maybe. That's what's weird about
your hatred of kids. Is that it?
That's what's weird about having a podcast is that like I'll, you know, get messages from listeners or like friends of ours that listen. They'll be like, yeah, I remember that one thing you said that one time, which, you know, we've had the podcast for years and meaning I never go back and like re-listen to our episodes, our old episodes very much. It's not like I'm like sitting around listening to myself talk, though that probably shocks some people out there that I'm not, but
it's just a blatant lie.
It just so it's always wild to me when people are like, remember that one thing you said? And I'm like, no, that would be like me remembering like some random conversation from years past or whatever. So I'm not, all this is to say, I'm not sure if I've ever actually said what I did for a living, but I'm more than happy to be really open and honest.
You love kids. And you were,
of course,
you were a lauded teacher that got awards for. Why'd you quit teaching, man?
I was a teacher. I was a middle school teacher here in Lexington, Kentucky for 12 years. I taught at one middle school that entire time. And I loved it so deeply all 12 of those years. And I also found it incredibly difficult toward the end, too. Like the biggest reason why I switched careers is truly my passions evolved and changed into a different direction. But also, it is really hard to be a teacher in the year of 2020.
Let's say, give me some more juicy bits than that.
Like, yeah.
What went wrong as a teacher? Like, why'd you fall out of love?
I don't know if anything necessarily went wrong. I think that it took me a long time to figure out that I actually wasn't full-blown cut out for it.
What do you mean by that?
Your career teachers that are really good at what they do, they're the most special, most wonderful breed of human. And like, they have an insane amount of, they have the thickest skin possible.
Patience out
the
wall.
They have patience out the ass. They are kind to the core, but they're firm. They have like, these are all things that like I tried really hard at, but I just like couldn't cut the butter, so to speak. I'm too much of a control freak. I think that if things weren't a certain perfect way, like the direction in which I thought a lesson would go, I viewed it as a failure and I kind of took it out on like frustrations on myself.
Well, let me ask you this. As an almost career teacher, 12 years, that's a hot minute in Lexington, Kentucky at a middle school. How did it change? Like,
oh God,
the climate of being a teacher 10 years ago to now, like what was there, is there drastic changes or?
No, it was incredibly subtle. I would say technology itself changed the field tremendously. Because when I started teaching back in like 2011, cell phones had been around at least 10 years at that point, but they weren't. Like social media, like we really only had Facebook back then.
It wasn't like
then.
Ubiquitous.
No, and Snapchat is kind of the devil of anything having to do with students in general because they use it for bullying. They also, I don't want to go on and on because like this could be its own episode and a huge tangent, but I will sum it up in this way, which is nobody can really put their finger on how COVID really changed students.
Oh.
Ask any teacher and they will tell you resoundingly it's harder now than it was before COVID. But weirdly,
harder how?
Exactly. And most people, your average teacher can't quite put their finger on one exact reason.
What do they just not want to say?
Well, I'll say.
There we go. Now we're talking.
It dawned on me.
The kids got worse. That's what you're trying to say, right? Well, and teachers trying to say. The kids got impatient and obsessed with their phones more than ever before.
The kids have become so full-blown addicted to technology, like to the point where, I mean, and now in Fayette County, each and every one of them has a Chromebook. And so you're given a device, like whether you had a phone or not, however your parents felt about phones and stuff like that, doesn't matter. Now you've got a device that connects you to the world. Granted, so many things are blocked, but for the most part, I mean, they're so smart. They're smarter than any adult could be at technology. They figure out how to get around that and they become full-blown addicted to the point if they're playing a game in your class and you're taking away their Chromebook, they shake and act like they're going through, like the like honest to God,
start stuttering
symptoms of withdrawal of like a I'm not being dramatic, and we've done that to them, you know what I mean? Like they're online so much, they create this online persona where they can be really blatantly rude or honest or whatever online.
Trolls.
And that has now trickled into how they feel they can act towards people of authority in real life.
Really? So,
absolutely. I have never in my life, from the past 12 years of teaching, dealt with so much verbal aggression, even physical aggression. Not towards me, but like it happens in, and it's not just my middle school. I guarantee you that. It is across the, it's not a Lexington, Kentucky. This is across the country where aggression, both verbally and physically, is escalated, but especially verbal, just like cussing people, adults out, talking back.
Even when you like threaten them with the principal or with
calling
their mom.
They'll cuss the principal out. And the parents are just as bad, if not worse. I mean, they don't feel like, I've never seen so much blatant placating of the student by a parent in my life.
Maybe you left at a good time, homegirl.
I could have kept going. There's no, what I loved about teaching is I knew I was doing great work every day. I can't, but I also made me so exhausted. Like you give so much emotionally to that job that I would come home every day and I wouldn't have anything left for my own kids. And it just made me really so exhausted on all of these ways that I've only just now kind of figured out that I was giving way too much energy to. At the same time as this aggression has really skyrocketed, what has also simultaneously skyrocketed is this idea that's really upheld in education, which is every kid learns differently, right? Every kid comes from really can come from abuse and from trauma and all. And so we give a lot of what's called accommodations in education. So everything, like whenever you're doing a test, for example, you can have extended time. You can have a scribe, like an adult who actually writes for you.
You think it might be a slippery slope going down that rabbit hole? I love me some liberal policies. I want to help out everyone I can, but is there a slippery slope involved in that?
I think it's a great question. I think that it, to me, it looks as though those two things, meaning the amount of aggression towards kids skyrocketing and the amount of accommodations that we allow skyrocketing,
exactly,
like all of that's going to come to a head.
Correlated somehow.
Right. All of it's going to come to a head. Middle school is such a funny time in somebody's development because their brains are not, they look almost like adults and they kind of are, but they're still like children. It's very different than elementary or high school. Like their bodies are developing faster than their brains. And they have all of a sudden this like super heightened sense of self-awareness at this time. I mean, I think you remember middle school.
Yeah, I remember having so much fun and being so scared simultaneously.
Exactly. Or just like, oh my God, I can't speak, you know, right. Like I can't talk. Everybody's going to make fun of me. But it's like that, but mixed with this extreme need to feel cool and important online and how that trickles into real life.
I'm so glad I missed that.
Yeah.
Thank God I missed that.
Yeah.
Too old, baby.
Yeah.
Poor kids. That must suck.
It does. And that's why I have a lot of opinions on when kids should get cell phones. My kids will not have cell phones until they're 12 or 13 years old. And my kids who are 5 and 9, my 9-year-old has, her friends have had phones for years since her friends were 6 and 7 years old.
There's probably arguments
For and against. Absolutely.
Maybe she'll feel a certain way about one of her friends having the cell phone.
Right. And and when I say this to other people too, the argument is always like, well, if her friends have it, then she has access to her friends' phones, etc. You know, and so there's really no way to get around it. We're all just kind of doing as best we can. And it's a really, it's the wild, wild west of technology right now. I think we forget that social media has really only been around for about 10 years and we're really figuring out all the nuances of it.
Yeah, it's going to take a while too.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And we're probably doing a lot of damage now that we don't realize.
I know we've ran this in, like, it's a dead horse at this point, but one quick thing you said earlier I would love to know about. You said Snapchat is the main bullying tool.
The worst.
How so?
Exactly. Snapchat, and if our listeners don't know what Snapchat is, it is a social media app where you can take a photo or just send a chat, and it vanishes. So whatever you send, it could be a picture of just you, a selfie. It will vanish within like 5-10 seconds.
It's meant to be a fun little thing you send to a friend that quickly disappears.
Right. And you can send it out to a whole group of people. You can send it out to just certain people. You can send it out to one person. And because it, quote, disappears, right, you can't keep, it's not like Facebook or Instagram where it stays up on your feed. Students are under the impression that, like, they can send just about anything they want. Rude, not rude, compromising things.
Oh. Yeah, and can you not take a quick shot of it, you know? Like, once it pops up, you take a picture of it on your phone. Screenshot.
Yeah, you can, but it tells the person that you took that screenshot. So then it's kind of like, you could take one. But now you're untrustworthy.
Yeah.
So now you're not going to get my snaps anymore because you're somebody who takes a screenshot.
Something really, you can get them in a lot of trouble.
Oh, absolutely. But here's the thing about Snapchat, which all of my research in all of these cases, in fact, the one that we're about to talk about, the case that we're about to talk about, mm-hmm. has proven there is nothing on Snapchat that goes away. It stays forever in your data, in the cloud, so to speak. Our counselors at our school are able to retrieve Snapchat data from cell phones. I don't know how they do it, but they are able to find it and then use
NSA,
it.
How they even do that? Those little administrators that...
There's ways, man.
Hacking into people's phones.
Yeah, because when bullying is afoot, you know what I mean? Like, that's an actual...
I hear you.
So, and then the case that we're about to discuss, actually, the police are able to recover some pretty incriminating evidence using Snapchat. So
there's no way that not in the near future there's going to be a blackmailing epidemic.
I think it's already happening.
Just from, like, give us $500, we're going to lease... Like, we're not trying to blackmail you for a million, hotshot. It's going to be anybody, like AI. It'd be too easy.
It would be too easy, especially with Alexa being in every single one of our rooms listening
to
us anyway.
Do they have naked pictures or of any kind on their... On the huge search we're going to do on all their social media. If they do, send them an automated message saying, send $500 to this, or this picture gets sent to you. It just a computer did it.
Right. Well, another thing with that, though...
Because we're all freaking weirdos. We all do stupid stuff on our phones.
Not me.
Well, good for you. What a Girl Scout.
The only things I think that I would be called on the carpet for are all of the random things I have to Google for these cases. So it's like, how long does arsenic take to work?
What's it taste like? Great questions.
Or, though, like, I'll look up, like, blood spatter analysis. Jesus. Yeah, I know. I look crazy, but it's because I'm researching these cases.
You're definitely on FBI's.
Yeah.
Watch list.
The last thing I'll say about Snapchat, though, in regards to middle school students, is that what else is a really big deal is that they like to fight each other. I've never seen so many fights as I have the past few years. And it's not just like boys, like girls will fight. And the idea is that you have a lot of clout in that world if you're the one who has filmed it. So that way you can send it off to everybody else. So they'll start filming before the fight even starts because they're in cahoots.
Instigating the crap out of it.
Exactly. Wow. So this is what this only scratches the surface of what school teachers are dealing with right now in regards to how technology has really affected students.
So what are you doing now?
I'm glad.
You're not a teacher.
I'm not a teacher.
What the hell are you doing?
I resigned at the end of this last year, and it was really good. I ended the way I wanted to. I said goodbye in the way that, yeah, it felt good, you know, but it was really, really bittersweet too.
More sweet than bitter, though.
Yeah. But I was really unsure as to if it would be, because I didn't know quite how this next chapter would play out. But essentially, I have gone back to school. I have a bachelor's in English. I have a master's in English education.
Oh, the teacher's become the student.
What do you mean?
You went back to college.
I went back to college.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm getting another master's in historic preservation from UK.
Huh.
And I would try for the PhD, but there is no PhD in historic preservation. It's called a terminal degree. So the highest you can get in that is a master's. Because as you know, I have an extreme love and passion for history, and specifically Lexington, centralized Central Kentucky history. My goal is to get this master's and really dive deep into local preservation. I want to work with as many different historical societies as possible. And I really want to create a magazine eventually. That's my biggest dream, is to create a very cool Lexington lifestyle magazine that still has this cool historic preservation twist on it. So like essentially focusing in on people who live in historic houses or the ways in which that we're restoring neighborhoods in Lexington, but still like fun, cool stuff in it as well that makes it more accessible, kind of like a, I don't know, a real simple or like a really fun domino.
You're such a typical little artsy chick. Good Lord.
My God. I
have my own magazine. Huh?
Hope that's a compliment, but it would, I mean, it's going to be a giant experiment. It'll be self-published.
I mean, you're trying to make quite a few splashes.
Yeah. Well,
ambitious, rock and roll girl.
Yeah. It's an idea that I cannot get out of my head. Yeah. I wake up every day and think about it, and I go to bed every night and think about it, and I think about it nonstop in between.
Oh,
and
surely that's the goal for all of us, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I think
your next career should be something you just adore.
Yeah, and thank you. I spent so long as a teacher where I was given so much freedom at my school. I was given they were so good to me. They allowed me to be super creative. And I taught design for so long. I don't know if people know that. I had like a makerspace. We did 3D printing and woodworking and sewing and like all of these really fun crafts and things that I was excited to teach and I was just treated so well. So in a lot of ways, I was very creatively fulfilled, but there was always just something like really missing from that because I don't know, to be quite honest, like it took a little bit of the joy out of it to like make it this regimented lessons that I had to do. Whereas now it sounds so selfish, but it's like, I'm ready to pursue stuff where like, it's just me working on it because I want to control every last aspect of it.
I don't blame you one bit.
But all that is, so that magazine is in the works. I'm really, really excited about it. I'm going to base my whole master's around it, and I'm taking a lot of journalism classes as well, which are teaching me things like magazine layout and editorial stuff and like all this great things.
I'm going to need to get your head back in the podcast. The magazine comes later.
No. So really the most important part of all of this is that it also gives me time to really focus in on my favoritest of passion projects, which is called the Lexington Podcast.
Yeah.
Yes. And we have a really great season planned.
We got cool stuff coming
We've
up.
We've got cool stuff in the pipeline.
Sorry
for
being such a hot minute for not putting stuff out. But.
Okay, so first of all, listeners, I apologize for going on and on about teaching, which I loved and is now over and I moved on and I'm in a really cool spot. And now we can talk about the podcast here in just a second, which is to say first, what have you been doing this whole time? Because let's go ahead and talk about your band.
I've just been sitting on my hands waiting for the next episode of the podcast.
Liar. It's like pulling teeth to get him over
here.
It's not true.
We've had an incredibly difficult year. So this is really exciting for me. It really is to be back in action, man.
Yeah.
We have cool stuff. Keep listening to us. We have really cool stuff coming, truly.
And just to have a nice little reboot too.
Mm-hmm.
Since I'm not so focused in on teaching, I have a much more flexible schedule at UK, and which really allows us to be able to make this what we always wanted it to be, which was an every week thing. I think you and I are on the same page about we want this to be a full-blown job, or at least like a really cool side hustle.
Discussing historic and contemporary things about where all of us live.
Yes, absolutely. You know? And true crime.
And true crime.
Yeah. So speaking of, let's jump into some true crime. I think we have dilly-dallied long enough. Unless, of course, any other questions?
So in regards to our dad dying, you know, it's kind of far enough now that we've, you know, at least myself to say, have been able to reflect on it more without emotion and such. So I was able to look up, just through being interested in it, the five stages of grief. And what I found was actually really fascinating and not what I thought. So
the five stages of grief.
Five stages of grief.
Which is super famous, right?
Super incredibly famous.
Yeah.
It's used all the time for people that are struggling with grief. But fascinating enough, the woman who made it, she did not make it. Her name is Kubler-Ross is her last name. She made it specifically for terminally ill patients who were on their way to their deaths, right? So the five stages of grief, those five stages, are what applied to them as they're going through the motions of dying. The psychological field hijacked it and used it for every little conceivable thing dealing with grief.
Oh my God.
So as far as my experience with our dad, which I think is an extraordinarily powerful connection, your father dying, yeah, you should experience many stages of grief. I did not experience several of these stages. And I don't think, and I think the reason why is because it was never meant for people who lost a loved one. It was meant for those who were on their way to their deaths, right? So it's foolish, I believe. This is just my random anecdotal thing to say, but it's foolish to think you'll experience the five stages of grief without that prior you're dying aspect to the premise, right? So anyway.
What are they?
It starts with denial.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure about you, but I never had any denial. About,
oh, I did. For sure.
Denial?
Well, I don't. It was, you know, our dad suffered a major
cardiac event,
which they never called a heart attack, but in its own way it was.
Yeah,
it was, which then spiraled him into, he never really got over that, and so he was at Baptist Health in Cardinal Hill, in and out for 2 months, and every day it was a sense of, like, you know, I mean, anytime you and I have been sick, we have gotten better. So that gets in your head pretty quick. Like, well, of course he's going to get better. How and in what ways are we going to go about that? And I think that's its own sense of denial when you're being given liver reports. Remember those all the time? It's always like about his liver.
Right.
And it wouldn't be that great. Like, you were still like always like, okay, but then now what? Instead of it being like, okay, that's not good. You know, so that's, I think that's its own sense of denial. You were never in denial.
About his lessening condition and his likely his death coming. No,
yeah.
It wasn't any denial. It was just like sadness. So after denial is usually anger. So let's just keep applying this to the terminally ill person. So
Okay.
You have terminally ill. You're about to die from cancer, right? So there's nothing they can do. It's in your head. It's over. At first, you're like, screw that. I'm going to see another doctor. You deny it. Next thing is the second doctor says, nope, the first doctor was right, man. You're in deep crap. So it's anger now. Well, what the hell? Anger at, you know, the situation. The next one becomes bargaining, right? So
with maybe, who? Maybe, like God?
Maybe holistic medicine can help me. Like maybe a shaman can help me. Maybe God can help me.
Oh, yeah.
Bargaining.
Getting
desperation. And then once desperation doesn't pan out with your actions, you get depressed. I'm screwed. Yeah. No chance of this. And then the last one, once you've had enough time to feel really sorry for yourself, is acceptance. So that applies to someone who is dying. I don't think those all come into play with those who lose loved ones, even though fascinatingly enough, it's applied like it is. So I think psychology, I'm just a little moron that doesn't know squat. I don't have a psychology, any kind of background, but you should be careful how you apply the five stages of grief if you're not actually dying yourself, because you might psych yourself into it. You know, words are powerful. Your identity is powerful. Things you see and hear are powerful, you know?
Yeah.
That's why we have an epidemic of people with different types of diagnoses from the DSM in our country. And it hasn't helped suicide rates, hasn't helped lots of different things. Like, the more you put a name to something, the more people get worse.
Latch on to it.
You know what I mean?
It.
Latch on. Like, it becomes their identity. And you don't want your identity to be borderline personality disorder. You don't want your identity to be major depressive disorder. If you put a name to it, and that's what happens with the five stages of grief. Like, I should be experiencing anger.
Right.
So now you do. And now maybe I should be bargaining.
Self-fulfilling.
Exactly.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Our own mind is dangerous in those in those crummy moments. You know?
Yeah. It's almost like ignorance is bliss, really. Like, just don't.
Deal with it completely by yourself. Don't listen to what other people have to say about your possible future experience.
I think the party line with grief should be, which is becoming more and more prominent, like, everybody experiences it differently. Everybody is allowed to experience it differently.
Totally.
I mean, the expectations around grief are pretty weird.
Yeah.
Like, my own grief was its own roller coaster for sure. And without getting too hardcore into it, was like, by the time our dad was a really well-known author and professor in his own field. And so there are people coming in from all over the world to his memorial. And I was always so used to, like, entertaining people like that with him. So, like, when they came in, I felt like I had to kind of be the great host like he always was towards them. And then I would always kind of wonder, like, maybe I shouldn't be, like, smiling, and maybe I should, like, but I was, like, so genuinely happy to see these people at that time too. So it's like, I was trying to maybe not feel the way that I was actually feeling for fear that I didn't look like I was really suffering, which I was. grief is just so messed up, you know, it and totally there's no right or wrong way to grieve the death of your father. I don't think.
I know our dad. He would have loved. He was a host himself.
Yeah, he was.
He was a mover and shaker and a talker.
Yeah,
talker.
He was the coolest dude.
He'd
yeah.
be upset if we hadn't, you know, made the rounds and right. got to see everybody. You know,
and I really think if I like,
he always wanted his funeral to be, you know,
a party,
not dismal. Yeah,
yeah. You know? And I think that knowing him, if I had stood in a corner and just like cried, he just would have totally made fun of me.
Yeah, totally. Here's a tissue. Get back into yeah, the thick of things.
He's like, all right.
Yeah, that's exactly what it'd be. I think that's enough.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
yeah, grief is a weird one, but yeah. anywho, as far as podcasts and the things we're going to be talking about in the near future, before we get into one quick one, what do we have in store in the next few episodes?
We actually have several really great episodes that we had recorded before we stopped recording back in 2022. Yeah. We have an interview with the Take Back Cheapside organizers of that social movement.
Sweet.
Yeah. You were not able. It was Zoom. Yeah. And it's a fact.
That
you'll
had
love
to be
it.
Juicy.
It was great. No. They're such incredible people. So I can't wait to release that one. We have an episode with Burgess Carey, who he's fascinating. He owns Boone Creek Outdoors and he has a connection to the Bluegrass Conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
That was like actually one of our very first interviews like so long ago. It was actually during COVID, so we had to sit outside really far from each other.
That was a
and
great
stuff.
Day. That guy's a trip.
I love that guy. And there's not only stuff about Boone Creek Outdoors and the Bluegrass Conspiracy, but also Daniel Boone, because he bought land that originally was owned by Daniel
Who?
Boone. We have one from Richard Vimont, which is a close family friend of ours and quite the mover and shaker, and like helped form the government of Lexington, Kentucky, and he's a trial lawyer.
Legendary lawyer.
He's a legendary Lexingtonian,
yeah,
period.
Yeah.
And he has this crazy trial experience when he was fresh out of law school from UK, where he was trying a murder case. So that's a great episode that's coming. We have one that we promised that we would do, which is about cholera and the cholera epidemic in the 1800s. And that's kind of related to Town Branch, which now Town Branch Park is like everyone in Lexington can't stop talking about that park. And so there's a connection between the cholera epidemic and Town Branch Park, which we will talk about. But really, I think if you're a true crime fan, our biggest thing that's in the works is Savannah Spurlock. We are covering the 2019 case of the disappearance and murder of the 22-year-old named Savannah Spurlock. It was a huge case in recent years.
Give me like a decent little synopsis, if you don't mind.
Sure.
How old was she? She's like a young woman.
She's 22 years old.
Was at a bar or something?
She was at a bar. She was at Two Keys and then went over to what's called the Other Bar. So right over there on Limestone next to campus.
Well, we won't get too many details.
No, I'll just tell you what the news has already told everyone and their dog.
Perfect.
She leaves with three males. They go to one of the males' houses in Lancaster, which through all of my research, local Lancaster people pronounce it Lancaster.
I've noticed the British way?
Lancaster. It's like real quick.
Huh.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like for sales or Louisville, how there's like certain ways you pronounce things.
Huh.
I'm pretty sure that people from
have to pronounce
Lancaster. They
way.
Well, of course, everybody is quick with stuff, you know, so it's
right.
Lancaster. Anyway,
right.
They go back to
fair
Lancaster. I'm just going to call it Lancaster because I feel weird. I'm not a local.
On paper, it's too.
It it's too
like,
easy.
Looks like
yeah.
Lancaster.
And she goes missing and is found 6 months later. This is in January. Keep in mind that she goes missing like January 3rd. So right after New Year's, super cold.
Okay.
And then there was a huge manhunt. Media made it a circus. Everybody couldn't stop talking about it. And everybody was like, where's Savannah? Where's Savannah? She just disappeared. She was a young mother. She had four kids. And she was found 6 months later. She was found in a clandestine grave in Lancaster.
That's obviously from one of the dudes that had taken her.
Well, maybe, maybe not. You'll have to tune. Well, I mean, of course, the news is already like proven all of this.
I can't wait for all the juicy little bits that
yeah.
I know you've snuck out of all those
cases. Here's the thing is that we will be debuting details and evidence from the case files that has never been published before.
Sweet.
So the news has even said outrightly, like, things in the case files we cannot air.
But it's public record, right?
It's absolutely public record.
But the media just won't. It's too.
It's not viewer appropriate for the 5 o'clock news.
Fair enough.
Kind of
okay.
thing. And there's so many themes around this case. Snapchat comes into play and how social media plays a role in this.
Mm-hmm.
Victim blaming and victim shaming is huge with this case. how people handle going out and nightlife and how you should maybe stick together or how you treat people after they come over to your house after you've been party culture, essentially, is a big theme in this, too.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're going to cover Savannah Spurlock.
But also, we have a really fun episode for Appalachia folklore and different superstitions and such. Appalachia is full of strange beliefs that are very fun to...
White walkers of... Wait, what was it? Streetwalkers. Sleepwalkers.
Skinwalkers.
Idiot.
Streetwalkers.
Let's talk about streetwalkers in Appalachia. That's what I was going to talk about. What a crazy lady. No, it's going to be a cool episode because Appalachia... They've definitely stolen a few things from other cultures, but they have some unique, random thoughts of their own from deep, deep down in the holler that are really interesting.
Perfect.
And not to say that like presumptuously, but like they have really unique beliefs about certain things that are definitely worthy of talking about. Superstitions that make a strange backwoods kind of sense and also very bizarre. There's all sorts of fun things to talk about in that episode.
I can't wait.
Look forward to that as well.
Can't wait. And I will say one last thing. Talking to a friend of mine about the podcast, I was telling him about how we are going to be revamping it. And I told him, I was like, I don't think we're going to be doing any more of like our local recommendations or what we always use. It's a segment we used to call Out and About, you know, like where to go in Lexington and the latest stuff.
Right.
And he was like, no, please don't get rid of that. His reasoning for it, which I thought was great. He was like, you always do it at the end of the episodes. And it's nice, like after all of this, like hardcore blood and true crime
Chili's
stuff.
Is renovated, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, it's a nice palate cleanser.
Fair enough.
And he was like, you know, and there's been lots of places that you've recommended that I've gone to and really enjoyed. So we're going to keep that as well, because there's nothing I love more than nightlife and foodie culture of Lexington. And I think that that's really fun thing to kind of think about as well.
Fair.
And last thing, really, truly this time, we have to review Railbird 2023. Because
Railbird,
they came back with a vengeance this past year. We should definitely.
I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, sounds great. So we will do that, brother.
Love you, sis.
Love you, brother. This episode of the Lexington Podcast was written and produced by Erica Fries. Original music by and co-host extraordinaire Jonathan O'Hare. If you need to get a hold of us, feel free to message us on Instagram. We're Lexington Podcast on Instagram. Or if you need to email us anytime at lexingtonpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much.